Welcome back to the Renaissance Foundation podcast, a podcast about inspiration made by the young people at our youth charity. We support young carers, hospital patients, and at-risk pupils in London. I'm Corey, a member of staff at Renaissance Foundation, and I'm going to tell you about today's episode. We spoke to Dr. Andrew Aldrin, president of the Aldrin Family Foundation, director of the ISU Center for Space Entrepreneurship at Florida Tech, and son of Buzz Aldrin, one of the first men on the moon. He's joined by his friend and colleague, educator Jim Christensen. They blew us away with their presentation about the work they've been doing with young people, getting them involved in the development of tech for space. They told us about initiatives in schools which students helped to create satellites sent into space, and they also told us about a competition coming up which is about designing the perfect home on the moon. We love talking to you guys. Thank you so much for inspiring us, teaching us about the possibilities of space technology, and just having a lot of fun. Thank you. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you, Jim, for talking to us. Thank you, Lucy, from the Embassy, for making this call possible. All the young people that joined, thank you. Thank you to those that asked questions, and also all the amazing staff at Renaissance Foundation for planning it. If you'd like to find out more about Renaissance Foundation, who we support, and how to donate, go to our website, renaissance-foundation.com, or donate through Just Giving. Also, there's one thing I just wanted to add onto the episode that we hope you like. You'll hear that it starts with one of our young people talking about their passions. The reason why it starts in the middle of their answer is because I didn't hit record in time. I got so carried away with talking with our guests and having fun with the young people, I didn't hit record. So the only thing you guys missed out of at the start was me introducing myself and saying about my passion being music and photography and film. And then also you'll hear a young person called Ose that's 16, and she'll just be talking about what she's studying and her passion. So yeah, let's just jump straight into it.
I'm 16, and I have to say my favorite subjects at school are the sciences. I'm very passionate about anything that's like arts and crafts, so like dress designing and making. I'm going to nominate Angus next.
Hi, my name's Angus. I'm 14. My favorite subject is art, and I'm passionate about stop motion animating. And I haven't got anyone to nominate.
That's okay. That was a really nice introduction, and I've been really enjoying the little short films that you've been making, Angus. They've been really, really good. So thank you for joining today's session. So Chuck, we heard you say hi earlier. Do you want to introduce yourself, Chuck? Tell us your name, what year you're in school, and something that you're passionate about.
Well, my name is Chuck. I'm 13, and I'm passionate about animation and drawing.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Thank you. Blessed, would you like to introduce yourself, please?
My name's Blessed. I'm 17.
I'm passionate about music.
Oh, I knew you were going to say that. I didn't even need you to repeat that. I knew you'd say music. Well, I hope you've been practicing a lot since we heard you play guitar last.
Yeah,
a lot. You're still playing a lot of Blur song too?
No, I'm on song three now.
So you've progressed. I like it. Thank you very much. Who else has not introduced themselves? Lucy, would you like to introduce yourself, please? And you can say it on the mic or you can type in the chat.
Well, this one for me. This is Lucy from the Embassy. I'm just sitting in. I've had to come outside in the park because I've got construction noise in my house. But my favourite subject in school was English, and my passion is running.
Oh, thank you. Thanks so much for joining. And I'm jealous that you're in the park because it's so lovely outside today. I don't know if you guys at the Aldrin Foundation realise, but it's a big thing for us to talk about the weather, and it's a really nice day today. So thanks so much, Lucy, for joining. We've got one from Bessie who's typed it in the chat. My name's Bessie. I'm 12 years old. I'm passionate about sports, and my favourite subject is PE, physical education. So yeah, we're just talking about being outside. So I can see that you're like in the weather as well, and imagining doing your favorite subject. Oh, thank you. Why don't we come back to Nisha? Why don't you want to introduce our guests who've been really sat here polite, so listen to us introduce ourselves, and I hope it helps now you've heard a little bit about us, who we are, to help with the conversation. Thank you.
Yeah, so I won't talk for long, but I'm just gonna hand it over to Andy and Jim. So thank you so much for joining us today.
This is great. First, let me introduce myself a little bit more in your format. My name's Andy. I'm really old, so I'm not going to even tell you how old I am. My passion is Like Corey, I love to take pictures. I love to take pictures underwater, especially. My other passion is the future of spaceflight. You're going to hear about that. My favorite subject is whatever subject I happen to be teaching, by the way. But I'll tell you a little bit more about that. Jim, I nominate you, Jim.
First, I'm Jim. I like to talk about the weather, too. You're having a nice day. I'm looking out my window here, and it's just a beautiful, if hot, day here in Florida. Andy, of course, is in the mountains, in the cool mountains. I'm in the heat where the rockets are launched. I am actually a year older than Andy, but just 1 year older. My passion, it's a little hard to say. I kind of like whatever I'm doing, it seems like. I like learning new stuff and space in particular. But every time I start on a project, I think I know something about it. And the more I find out, the more I realize I don't know. There's just so much to know. So that's really my passion. So back to you, Corey.
Oh, thank you. That's really helpful to hear you guys sharing your passion. And also, I'm happy that, Andy, that you're interested in photography as well and technology. So I was like a big thumbs up with that. But it's really interesting to hear how open you guys are to learn new things and how you're saying that you enjoy, both of you enjoy whatever subject that you're teaching. I think that really helps because we've got a lot of young people here that are talented in many different subjects and skills. So I think it just shows that you can bring them together. It doesn't have to be, they don't have to exclude each other. Thank you for that.
You should all see my charts now, right?
Yeah, we can see it.
Okay, great. So I'm Andy. I've already introduced myself. And today, what I want to talk to all of you about is the amazing opportunity that all of you have. It's, when I grew up, the idea of participating in space, well, I mean, first of all, because Dad, that's him back there, by the way, he was going into space, but it was, almost unthinkable that I would participate in space or that my friends would participate in space because it cost billions of dollars. And, I ended up being involved in space programs and it's been wonderful and exciting. But the opportunity that all of you have to participate in space is just something that I could never have seen happening. And so that's what I want to talk about today. And I'm going to say a couple of things about our foundation. So, as you know, I run the Aldrin Family Foundation. It's kind of, it has part of it is share space education, which Jim Christensen runs, and you're going to hear from Jim in a little while. We've got kind of three levels of activities that we have. The first is, as I mentioned, share space education, and that's providing education to young students from anywhere from kindergarten to before they're getting into college. Another program that we support is a program I run called the Center for Space Entrepreneurship, and it's looking at how the commercial sector is taking over, I think, over the long term space and the amazing things that are happening there. And what we're trying to do at the center is really train the next generation of space leaders. And then finally, we have a research program at the Aldrin Space Institute at Florida Institute of Technology that we run. And so those are kind of like the three major things that we do. But in general, our vision is we want to use the excitement of space to inspire all of you to pursue what you're passionate about, whether it's the arts, whether it's music, whether it's photography, or whether it's engineering. There is a place in space for you, and we'll talk about it in a few areas, and there's opportunities that are just incredible. So things are changing right now, and we really are, as a global society, really taking the next giant leap in space, and all of you are going to have an opportunity to participate in ways you never could have and never would have thought. And it's not just It's not just for engineers. It's for musicians. It's for writers. It's for business people. And people from all different countries, all different walks of life. You'll see when I get into a chart just how much it's extended. And all of this is what I call a process of the democratization of space. And it's really unprecedented, but the opportunities that all of you will have should you choose to pursue something along these lines are just incredible. So let me talk about the first thing, which is, so for the last 50 years, 60 years, really, we've been, for the most part, with the exception of that brief period of time when we went to the moon, we have been orbiting around the Earth and learning how to live and work in space. And all of that's been great, but we're actually extending out now. So we're building space stations in the vicinity of the moon now. We're actually starting to develop systems that are going to land on the moon. And the thing that's really different about what's happening today is we're not just going to the moon to land and walk around and as we say, flags and footprints. We're going there to stay. And we're actually going there because we think there are real business and commercial opportunities. So on the poles of the moon, there in the deep shaded craters, there's actually water. There's ice. And ice is oxygen and hydrogen. And oxygen and hydrogen are rocket fuel. And there are perhaps immense quantities of rocket fuel on the moon. There are minerals, you know, everything from precious metals like platinum to just normal iron ore and things like this. There are tremendous resources on the moon that it's much cheaper to take something from the moon and deliver it to a space station than it is to take it from the Earth. And so we see the potential for actually a space economy beginning on the moon. And this is something that everyone will have an opportunity to participate in. And then finally is Mars. And I think Mars is, I think, the first time that the human race will really go to another planet, to a planet which is completely different. And Mars will tell us very important things about whether there's life in the rest of the universe, whether humanity can actually extend beyond the Earth and live on another planet. And these are just kind of incredible things. And in a school today, maybe one of you, there is a child in a school today that will be the first person to set foot on Mars. And every one of you will have an opportunity to participate, because when we go to Mars, and even when we go to the moon, it's not going to be just for explorers and astronauts, because we're going to go there permanently. Everything that you do on the Earth, you'll have to learn to do on Mars and on the moon. And so we will need not just engineers and construction workers, but if you're going to be there, you need entertainment, you need all of the things that are important to life on Earth. You're going to have, particularly on Mars. So that's one thing that's different. The second thing in the democratization of space is the number of nations that are flying in space. Right now, 83 countries have space programs. 8 years ago, the number was about 40. So over the last 7 years, we've seen the number of countries which have space programs double. And it means that every nation, it will be participating in space in the future. I teach a program in space commercialization. And this summer, I have three students from Africa, one of which is working in the African Space Agency. And it's incredible how space is extending out everywhere. And a big part of that, a huge part of it, has to do with things that are happening in the commercial economy. So another great opportunity that's in front of you, all of you, is the opportunity to fly in space. you know, by the time you're, you know, the ripe old age, really old, really, really old, like 40, which is like 20 years younger than me, you're going to have the opportunity to fly in space. The tickets may not be cheap, but they will be getting much cheaper. And I think by the time you're 40 years old, the cost, it will be something where if you want to have a big vacation, it's a possibility that you can do this. And so there are right now, you have Richard Branson, whom I'm sure you all have heard of in the UK. You also have Jeff Bezos, who is the world's richest man, who is putting his money into developing a system to send people into space. And you see it there. It's called the New Shepard. It's just a beautiful spacecraft with big windows. But I'll tell you the one that has me really, really excited, probably because it's some good friends of mine that are starting this business. It's called Space Perspectives. And what it is it's a balloon that goes up to about 100,000 feet. And so from that balloon, this is the view that you're going to have. You're going to see the curvature of the Earth. You're going to see the atmosphere and how thin it is. You'll get a perspective on the Earth that you would never have. And this is orders of magnitude, 10 times lower cost than some of these other things, because it's just a balloon that comes up and comes back down. And not only that, but you'll go into space for you'll be there for 6 hours. So Corey, you want to talk about some great pictures, man? You know, think about doing like a panorama from there, right? You know, one time I got to sit in the middle of Stonehenge and do a panorama of the whole thing, which was kind of wild. But think about this, a panorama of literally like half of the world. Anyway, I mean, this is going to be attainable, and this is what's in front of all of you. But I want to tell you I think the main driver of all of this is commercial space, where we're going to be. In fact, Elon Musk has already put 500 satellites into space with SpaceX, and he's going to be putting another 2,000 or so. There are literally going to be thousands of satellites that are going to give you access to the internet at much, much higher speeds anywhere you are globally. And there are at least three companies that I think there were four until a couple of weeks ago that are really very viable. But this is going to be a tremendous economic engine. We are predicting that the space economy will be a $1 trillion economy within the next 20 years. And you know, it was 10 years ago was maybe 100 million or something like that. And so it's incredible what's happening. Well, maybe 10 billion.
So we just started to experience some technical difficulties. Andy went to restart his presentation. And just while we were waiting for that, we opened up to questions. So we will hear a question from Chuck, and Jim will start to answer it. So I thought I'd just let you guys at home know what was going on, because we're having an amazing session. But as you know, technical difficulties can happen. I think everyone dealt with it amazingly well. So back to the podcast.
All the young people, what do you think of Andy's talk so far? Anyone?
It's interesting. I got a few questions I want to ask. So
yeah. For that. And was that you, Chuck, who was talking as well? So it was Osei and Chuck, did you?
Yeah.
So you've got questions stored up that you want to ask Andy when he comes back?
Yeah.
Well, why don't you say what the question is now, and then we'll hear the answer when we get to ask Andy when he comes back. And maybe Jim could help a little bit as well. If you've got a question for Jim, that would be, it'd be great.
Well, it's just like, how is a balloon going to like get up? Like, how does it gonna get up into the atmosphere?
I can actually answer that one. One of the things I used to do was I worked with a group that we did high altitude balloon flights with kids, and we set up a situation where we had balloons that would go to 100,000 feet. And they get up there, and then they basically explode. They keep expanding until finally they explode. But and we were able to track them in three dimensions and able to recover them. And it was so much fun. But the idea is it's a great big balloon and a great big gondola that's pressurized. And you're going to go up at about 1,000 feet per minute up to 100,000 feet, and you're going to hang out up there for about 6 hours, and then you're going to come down gently. That's the theory, gently in the ocean, and they're going to pick you up. Now, 100,000 feet, that's about 20 miles. So the borderline to space, well, if you're the Air Force, the U.S. Air Force, it's at 50 miles. If you're everybody else in the world, it's 62 miles. But so you're not going to be an astronaut for going up there. But I have pictures that we took from our balloon. You know, from we put a camera on it, video cameras on it, and a GoPro cameras. And I'll tell you what, it looks like space up there. It's black above. It's Earth below. I see Andy's back.
I am.
Everybody's dying to know what the most important thing is, Andy.
Okay.
I just wanted to say while you're working through your tech issues, Andy, that Jim was just answering a question that Chuck asked about the balloon in space and how that does that work. And I just want to say, Jim, is there any way we can see those photographs? Because they sound amazing that you got to take pictures literally on the GoPro.
Yes, I can share those. I've got some video. We had an up-facing, an out-facing, and a down-facing GoPro, and the pictures are stunning.
Well, thank you. What do you think about that, Chuck? Would you like the opportunity to do that? And has that answered your question?
Yeah, that answers my question, and I would also love to go in it.
So I didn't tell you about the tricky part. So the balloon goes up to 100,000 feet, and then you have to come down. And the balloon doesn't really want to go down, and it would take a really long time, and it's really kind of unsafe. So actually what happens is it drops you, and then you actually – it starts with a parachute, and actually you end up parachuting down to the ground. But you do actually – you end up in a certain amount of weightlessness as you fall from 100,000 feet because it's a long way down. But I think it's just – it's going to be fantastic, and I think it's it has the prospect of changing a lot of people's worldview, because I'm actually on the board of directors of a foundation that a friend of mine started called Space for Humanity. And I think it's something that you might all be interested in finding out about it. But the idea is to take people who are great, normal people and great communicators, people like all of you, into space and let you experience space and come back and talk to people about how it was life-changing, because it is. There's an overview effect, and people that go into space come back with a much, I think, broader view of humanity. And so it's an incredible thing. And I believe that space perspective, right, will probably be able to extend that experience to a lot more people, a lot more often, at a much, much lower cost. So anyway, I'm super excited about that. But as I said, that wasn't the most important thing, and we're going to get to that. Let's see if I can share my screen. All right, there we go. So these are some characters that I know in Silicon Valley. They're all, as it turns out, very wealthy now. But if you look in the middle of this, you see this thing right there, that's a satellite on Robbie's head. And that type of satellite has revolutionized space in a lot of ways. Instead of something that costs hundreds of millions of dollars, they build these for thousands of dollars. It's incredible. And it's changed everything we do in space. So this is what a CubeSat looks like. It's you all remember Rubik's Cube, maybe? Literally, you see 10 centimeters by 10 centimeters. It's tiny, and you can stack them together and things like this. But the point is, this is a functioning satellite, and it gets even more incredible when I get to some other things here in just a second. So these are kids that are like, I think they're about 10, 12 years old, building a satellite. That satellite that they're building there flew on the space station. I mean, it went to the space station, and they sent it out into space. And that's incredible. So it means that any of you could actually have the opportunity to work on building something that goes into space. And here's something that's even wilder. So it gets smaller. You see these little things? Each one of those ends up flying in space and functions as a little tiny satellite. And literally, we are working with this school in Eaglescliff, which is up by Newcastle. I forget the city that it's closest to. It's a school in the UK, in northeastern UK, where literally every one of the kids in the class is building one of these satellites. And they're going to launch them into space. And so this is something that we have to find ways of extending it to all of you to get the opportunity to build a satellite, and you program it and you do all of this cool stuff and you have your own satellite that's flying in space. And so that, when I told you that this is the coolest thing, this is the coolest thing. And it's literally happening in your country today with these kids, and they're like 15, 16 years old. Is that right, Jim?
Yes, that is correct.
And so that's it. That's the democratization of space. And I'm passionate about getting the inspiration, the passion of space travel to all of you. And it's there. This your generation has an opportunity that was never there before. And it's I'm totally excited for all of you. So anyway, that's my story and I'm sticking to it, but I'm delighted to answer questions.
I've got a question.
Yes.
So my question is, since lots of satellites are being built, how are you going to deal with all the space litter that comes with it?
Very good question. So, And it comes in the answer comes in lots of different flavors. The first one, the bigger thing, the real concern isn't these small satellites, because these things stay in space for a few weeks and they deorbit because there's a tiny bit of atmosphere at, let's say, I think these things are at 200 kilometers. There's drag and they deorbit and they burn up in the atmosphere and all of that is not much of a problem. However, when you're talking about 25,000 satellites for SpaceX, it is an issue. It is a huge issue. And that, I think, is one of the biggest challenges in the future of spaceflight right now, the biggest risks. And it's not simply a technical problem. And this is part of the thing that motivates me when I'm teaching students that are, older graduate students. It's not just a technical problem. We know how to build spacecraft or use other really clever things to deorbit these satellites when they die. Because the real problem is if you have one satellite that's functional, it can move and avoid a collision. But if you have two satellites that are completely dead and they hit each other, that could lead to an amount of debris that could make space unusable for certain altitudes at some point. And technically, we know how to figure this out. The real problem is, how do you do it economically? How do you pay for it? And how do you do it politically? How do you get countries to agree to do these kinds of things? It's a really, really super, super complex problem. And I don't have an answer for it, and I don't think anyone does yet. There are a lot of smart people working on it, but it's going to take it's going to take engineers working together with people who understand literally psychology, business, government. It's going to take a very diverse group of people to come up with solutions to this problem before it becomes kind of critical. But so it's a phenomenal, really challenging question. I'm sorry I don't have an answer for you, because it's just not out there.
That's cool. But I got a little idea. Space Wall-E's.
Space what?
Wall-E's.
Okay,
from Pixar.
Okay. it's so simple. I should have known. Anyway, great question. Any other questions? Okay, so I'm going to introduce my friend and colleague and the director of ShareSpace, Jim Christensen. Jim is, if you think I'm excited about space, you ain't seen nothing. But I think one of the really important things about Jim is Jim was one of the real pioneers of doing education in space. In fact, I think he was involved in doing the very first video conferences with astronauts on the space station to talk about education. And you know, this was a lot longer ago than probably he wants to admit. But since that time, he's been a real pioneer in developing a whole bunch of different programs for space. And to this day, he is at heart a middle school teacher. So he loves you all and he speaks your language. And we're really fortunate to have him here for a couple of minutes. So, Jim, take it away.
Hey, thank you very much.
I will stop sharing my screen now.
Good deal. Okay. First, what a privilege to be here. Renaissance Foundation, thanks for inviting us. And of course, our thanks go to the U.S. Embassy for setting this up. And Andy, thanks for those kind words. I have lived an adventure. I wanted to be an astronaut, and I never got selected, but I did get put in the astronaut office. And yeah, I wrote the procedures to do video conferences from space station. So if you ever see one of those events, I actually wrote those procedures, and I'm really proud of them. What I do wish they do is they'd update them. They pretty much do it the same way we designed it. What I actually came on to talk about is a challenge for you, because here we're all stuck at home. Now, I don't know your situation right now. We're still staying home, my wife and I, and although we're facing some challenges in the United States and people are kind of wanting to be over it, and we're not quite over it yet. I've been thinking about what kinds of things can we do? And one day I'm sitting at home working, and I thought, I might as well be on the moon. And I thought, yeah, I might as well be on the moon. And I came up with an idea for a project we call Home on the Moon. And the idea is that you design your home for living on the moon. And you think about what it is you do in your home now, and you make a design to accommodate all your needs. So, yeah, we might as well be on the home. How can we make the best of the situation? So there's some big ideas here. And one of the big ideas is, what does it take to live on the moon? Well, guess what? You need air, water, food, shelter, and energy. Guess what it takes to live in Titusville? Air, water, food, shelter, and energy, same things. And we have systems in our homes that provide those. So the first idea is, what are you actually using? And how much are you using? And how much waste are you creating? And so you do a study of your house. The second thing you start thinking about is how would those systems be modified to be on the moon? And once you understand the systems, it's the same systems. You're not making up new stuff. Now, I started messing with this idea, one of the things, and Andy talks about this a lot, is that space is not an individual kind of a thing. Space requires teams and requires cooperation. And one thing I've heard him say many, many times is that when we go to Mars, it's going to be a worldwide endeavor. It's not going to be one nation do this. It's not going to be one group of people. It's going to take everybody to do this. Well, the challenge to that is to be able to both communicate and collaborate. What I found throughout my career is that communications is probably the single hardest thing to get right. You can say things and you have the idea, oh, I said it, people understood. But no, it doesn't work that way. You have to be so intentional in communications. And so I tried to build a project that requires you to communicate and collaborate. Okay, so now you're saying, oh, it's a project I do at home, and who am I going to work with? Well, my suggestion is you get your family to work with this. If you're curious about this project, get your family, sit down around the table. And I hope you have an older sibling, and I hope you have some younger siblings, and you get your parents, because everybody's going to see it a different way. And that is going to provide some diversity on your team, because you've got a young sibling and they see your home a lot different than you do and understand in a lot of different ways. And it's a practice of those essential communication collaboration skills. Okay. So here's how this thing works. First, I figured out how to do a screen behind me, and the materials are all at aldrinfoundation.org. That's where you find these things. And it's called Home on the Moon. There's a couple links, a couple fun things. There's a video on there that's really fun called Spirit, a Martian Story, that, hey, it's 15 minutes long. Watch the video. But the materials for Home on the Moon, aldrinfoundation.org. And what you end up doing is you go through an overview. I've created videos, 5-minute videos, and you'll recognize that I am not a YouTube personality. Okay, you'll know that immediately. But hey, I'm honest and I'm sincere. So watch the video. It tells about what the project is. There's an overview. And then I want to give you a story of why you're doing it. And so I talk about the Apollo missions going to the moon, and then Artemis, which is happening right now to place the first woman and the next men on the moon. And then I go on and project a future where there's Armstrong base at the North Pole of the moon, there's Aldrin base in the South Pole of the moon, and there's the Collins Gateway Station orbiting the moon. Somehow that all seemed right to me. And then the idea is we're asking you to create a home, a proposal for a home, to be located at one of the 6 Apollo landing sites. And so you've got these locations, and I give you some assumptions you can make, you know, how they're going to be built, you know, the actual construction method, where you're going to get your energy from, how you can get resupply, all those kinds of things are in there. But that's in the backstory. And then I've got what's called a request for proposal that basically says, we'd like you to do this, 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 and this. And then, there's a video about the procedure that kind of describes how to go about it, and a video about resources we've identified. The problem was I started looking for places that people would want to do research, and it kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And our web people were just laughing at me, saying, how many resources are you going to have? Well, it's still growing. And then finally, what we'd like you to do is come up with some representation of what this home is going to look like. You know, what's the floor plan? What's it look like? And you can do it in lots of different ways. You can create a physical model. You can make drawings and diagrams. You can do something virtual. You could do something that, I haven't thought of. In fact, I kind of hope you come up with something I haven't thought of. That's the whole idea. But the big idea of this is put together a team and work with them. Put together a diverse team and work with them, and come up with something together. That's the big idea. A second big idea is, as you work on this thing, if you decide to do it, as you work on it, don't worry if you get sidetracked, because things will come up that you're really interested in, and here's your opportunity to study it. I had a person contact me and say, I am so fascinated with the idea of gardening on the moon. Well, explore it. You know, the end result to me isn't that you build my project. The end result is that you find inspiration someplace and do something cool. But like I was saying, I really encourage you to work with your family. Now, there is something that if you go in and if you register and if you create a model and you submit something, on August 15th, we're going to take a look at what we've got. And we've got a sponsor that makes these globes. Now, what you can't tell is this globe is about the weight of a shot put. This thing is like, this thing's solid, and it's heavy, and it's this high-definition moon. We've got 10 of these we're going to give away. We're going to pick 10 projects. And then, if you're not one of those lucky 10, we're also giving away 30 of these books. And these notebooks, they're just, you know, you take notes in these. They're just blank pages. but this is a cool notebook. It's my favorite notebook. Well, my Mars one might be even more favorite, but I've got a Mars, a Jupiter, and a moon. But we've got 30 of those we're going to give away. Now, right now, we have people registered from literally around the world. Not a lot of registrations, but we've got them from all over. We've got them from Pakistan, from Australia, from Chile, from Canada, from Ireland, of all places, and a couple from the United States. It's kind of funny that the United States, I think we've got more internationals right now than U.S. projects. Anyway, if you're curious about this, find it on the aldernfoundation.org and have some fun with this. Be inspired by it. Go out and do something fun. Okay, that's all I really had to say.
Awesome. Thank you so much to Jim and Andy. Like, it's been really inspiring. And is it all right if we have a couple of questions as well?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
So Andy wanted to ask a bit about what obviously it must have been really inspiring kind of growing up in a space family as well. And we're just wondering sort of, could you tell us a little bit about how that was growing up? And for me, just even today, if I hear like President Kennedy's Rice speech, you know, about going to the moon, it still, you know, sends shivers down your spine. It's something that's still relevant, what he was talking about, the challenges, and when he spoke about the overview effect as well. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if you had any sort of positive inspiration for our young people. As you both said, you know, a lot of us are at home and our charity supports young people who might have family challenges and health challenges. So we're hearing a lot of kind of challenging stories, but actually I understand with space, what you've been saying from your presentation is that there's going to be new industries created, new jobs. So the ones that, you know, are coming to an end of kind of old economy, this is a new technology economy. So yeah, it'd be great just to hear, because you've seen that generation firsthand, I guess, Andy, right? From your family to where we are now.
Yeah. Wow. There's a lot of stuff in there. So the first thing is when I grew up, you know, it was in a community where all the astronauts lived. And so if you look at my house, we lived at the end of the street. So we had a lot that was kind of like this, and there were like four or five houses on the back. Three of them were astronauts. In fact, the house directly behind us, I could jump over the fence into the backyard of Alan Bean, who flew on the mission immediately. He flew on Apollo 12. So I kind of joke, but at my elementary school, you know, I was 11 years old at the time, you couldn't swing a dead cat without hitting an astronaut's kid. So it was kind of normal, you know, that, all right, your dad's an astronaut. Yeah, right. So tell me about something cool that he does. And my dad pole vaulted, which was cool. But so it was when you live in, I mean, it's, I know it sounds weird, but my life was kind of normal because we were all part of the same community. And so I don't, you know, maybe in some ways we didn't really understand the enormity of what happened until I was much older. Let me kind of get to the last thing that you said, because my message today is that there are tremendous opportunities that are going to be coming up in space, and they're coming up in every discipline you can think of. And let's just talk about arts and the movies. With Tom Cruise is flying to the space station. They're going to film a movie on the space station with Tom Cruise. And you've got astronauts playing songs. But, you know, in a more serious sense, the things that are going to happen in space in the next few decades are going to have much greater impact right here on Earth. And let me just give you an example. So there are, we talked about thousands of satellites, and a lot of these satellites are going to be providing communications from anywhere to anywhere instantaneously at very high bandwidth. So that's great. That's a communications infrastructure. Another thing that I think is really important is we're going to have hundreds of satellites orbiting the Earth providing imagery, and it's not just pictures. It's imagery that's looking at things in all kinds of different spectral bands, but it's going to be almost ubiquitous, so that any point in time you're getting all kinds of interesting information about what's happening anywhere around the globe in data depth that we can't even conceive of the things that are going to come from this, and the kinds of industries that are going to develop by fusing together things like communications, high bandwidth communications, very high resolution imagery of the Earth with GPS, and we don't even know. And I think the real magic isn't going to be the technology. It's going to be putting these things together into businesses, into providing the farmer in the north of England the information that he needs. And it's not going to be some kid in Silicon Valley talking to the farmer. It's going to be somebody who knows the farmer, and the people, the opportunities that space will enable are going to be for everyone. Everyone who can somehow or another connect their community and the needs of their community to the kinds of things that we're going to be able to create, that we don't really even understand the value of all of this. And so I think there's huge opportunity to just put things together in different ways. And then the point which I made in my talk a little earlier is that, you know, the cost of these things is going to be coming down, and everybody is going to have the opportunity to sort of participate in the inspiration of space. So, you know, it's super exciting. And I think what Jim is doing to bring it into the home is something that I think is very relevant to what you're doing. And we're working on developing lessons and curricula that we're very excited about bringing to the UK. I mean, we're very excited about some of the things we're doing in Sunderland and Eglescliffe. And we'd love to bring those kinds of things, you know, more broadly into London.
Well, thank you, Andy. And we'd love to be part of that. And that'd be awesome if we could make an RF satellite as well. That would be so cool. So
we can do it.
Awesome.
I mean, literally, the company that builds these little chipset things, the kits, is actually up in northeastern UK.
Wow.
It is. I mean, it's they're 20 minutes away from Eglescliffe School.
That's awesome.
I mean, it's a UK company. We think there's lots of opportunity to do these kinds of things, and it's at it is astonishingly affordable. I mean, it'll blow your mind. I don't want to kind of give out a bunch of numbers, but it is something that we could make happen today, and we don't need Richard Branson to help us. I'm serious. We can do this.
That sounds awesome.
I've got a question. So this is for Jim. So are you like envisioning a sort of like space, like what's on Earth? So let's say like the transport system that's on Earth, are you envisioning that in space? Like, what's your vision to like an Earth-like society in space?
Oh, I would certainly like to see it. And I'm not sure I'm getting all your question, but I'd certainly like to see a time when there's a community both on the moon, a permanent community on the moon, and a permanent community on Mars. And I'd like to see it fully representative of everybody on Earth, and really a fresh start, both of those places. But the moon is close. It's 3 days away. Now, Mars is like 6 months away, different kind of world. Mars, it takes anywhere from 4 minutes to 22 minutes to just get a radio signal there and back. The moon, a second and a quarter. So the moon is pretty accessible. I'd like to think, though, that we could we'd have an opportunity to have people go up and be tourists on the moon. And I don't think I'm answering your question well. I don't think I'm fully understanding it.
Oh, no, you answered it perfectly. I just couldn't phrase it well. Also, here's a follow-up one. Do you think humans will, like, evolve to Mars's environment over like a long time of us living in Mars?
Actually, yes, I do. And this is the thing. Andy said this one time. We were over in, we were at this college, and he was speaking to these college kids. I was sitting in the back, and he said something that everybody was just stunned by. And he might know what I'm getting ready to say. He said, the first baby born on Mars is not coming back home, you know, not coming back to Earth. And everybody just sat up because it's one third gravity and you're going to develop in different ways. And we have evolved for one gravity and it's going to be different and your body is going to be different and your musculature is going to be, and skeletal system will be different. And so, yeah, you know, different conditions, we are going to change and it's going to be hard to transfer back. It's not going to be as hard to get there and adapt, but I think it's going to be hard to have people that are born there come back to Earth because of gravity. It's almost the Superman effect of different colored suns.
So, Osa, you've asked another really good and important question. And in fact, you know, going to Mars and actually having people live on Mars for long periods of time has always been my dad's vision. And so at the Aldrin Space Institute, we spent a fair amount of time looking at that. And we have had a couple of workshops where we brought together some of the smartest people in the world to think about Mars and the challenges of being on Mars, not just for a year or two, but for 10 years, because that's kind of the way it works out. The challenges aren't really technical. I mean, they're huge technical challenges. The challenges aren't just physiological. Probably the biggest challenges are going to be psychological. How do you have people living and working together on another planet? You know, Jim talked about Mars being 6 months away. The reality is, because of orbital mechanics, for most of the time, it's at least a year, more likely 2 years away. So when you go to Mars, you're there for a long period of time. And the people that live on Mars, I'm not joking. The people that live on Mars will become Martians.
You know what this reminds me of? There's this book I read probably 2 years ago called Satellite. And it was just like what you're talking about. So they had these babies and they were born in on the moon. And so after they were 16, they were brought back to Earth. And unfortunately, at the end of it, I don't want to spoil it, but the two of the children, they died because they weren't used to the gravity and their bone density was much less than it was on Earth. I was talking about the ethical issues of having children born in on the moon and psychological issues as well of them being alone in this space shuttle. I feel like you should read it. It's in this kind of like text kind of format, but it's super interesting. And it just brought up literally what you were talking about right now.
I'd love to look at it. And, you know, one of the interesting points that came up was we can try to prevent people from that live on Mars from having babies, but we'll fail. They will. Okay. They will. Someone will want to have the first baby on Mars. And I mean, that's just human nature. And so, those are the questions that, you know, the smartest people in the world really think that are going to be huge challenges. And it kind of speaks to my point that this, you know, the future in space is about big thinking and integrating all kinds of different problems of society, right? And when we go to Mars, we will go there as a world. It's not going to be one nation going there. It must be for lots of reasons, lots of different nations. And when they go there, they're going to become Martians, but they're still going to be like dependent on their home country. And that's just another huge challenge that we haven't really thought through. Anyway, great question.
Yeah, really, you're doing the coolest thinking. That's what we're trying to get at with Home on the Moon is just think about what would it be like to live there if you just took your family up there? What would it be? And what are all these effects? Cool stuff.
Well, we'd just really like to say thank you for taking the time to talk to us and delivering your presentation, which has got us thinking very positively, and then answering our questions and like just enlightening us. Thank you very much, guys. Can we get a big round of applause from everyone just to say thank you? And you can turn on the mic, you can do emoticons, whatever's best. Well done, everyone. Thank you. Thank you, Andy and Jim. We'd honestly love to talk for longer, but we do understand that you need to go.
I'm happy to do this again. I'd love to continue the relationship with you all. We're trying to organize a trip out there to kind of move forward on some of the things we're doing. So let's stay in touch and figure out ways of doing cool things together.
Who feels a lot smarter after that talk?
That was so cool. There was just so much to know. It was just so cool.
I was just going to say, we have to do this Home on the Moon project. It doesn't sound too different to some of these computer games. What's the one where you build your own home?
Yeah, The Sims 4, Homescape. There's many. I don't think of any. Yeah.
Yeah. Many. Angus, where do you think that the robot came from? I'm very intrigued. I did spot it, but yeah, I did think there was a story behind it. But
I think, I'm not 100% sure, but I think it's from the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Wow. Maybe we'll have to ask him that next time.
Thank you to everyone at home for listening to this episode. We really hope you were as inspired by listening to this as we were from hearing and seeing that presentation. It honestly got my mind thinking about so many different elements, and I thought the questions by our young leaders were absolutely brilliant. Honestly, you guys were so good. So just want to say thank you for listening to the whole episode. I hope everyone could take something away from it. Do go to the Aldrin Family Foundation website to find out about those competitions and those learning resources, because there's a wealth of knowledge there. And if you want to find out any more about Renaissance Foundation, you can go to our website, you can donate there. And if you need some more inspiration, you can also go to our YouTube channel, where we've got all the videos we've been making over the last 5 years, and with us out and about on our live visits, and just you hear directly from the young people. And then the last favor I would ask is, if you like this episode, please rate it 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Please share it with some friends on Spotify, on Google Podcasts, and just let it be known, because we're making this podcast ourselves in quarantine, and every listen, every share counts. So really appreciate it.